Now hear our gospel reading from Matthew chapter 2. After Jesus' birth, which happened in Bethlehem of Judea during the reign of Herod, astrologers from the east arrived in Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the newborn ruler of Judea? We observed his star at its rising and have come to pay homage." At this news, Herod became greatly disturbed, as did all of Jerusalem. Summoning all the chief priests and religious scholars of the people, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem of Judea," they informed him. "Here is what the prophet has written. And you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means least among the leaders of Judah, since from you will come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel." Herod called the astrologers aside and found out from them the exact time of the star's appearance. Then he sent them to Bethlehem after having instructed them, "Go and get detailed information about the child. When you have found him, report back to me so that I may go and offer homage too." After their audience with the ruler, they set out. The star, which they had observed at its rising, went ahead of them until it came to a standstill over the place where the child lay. They were overjoyed at seeing the star, and upon entering the house, found the child with Mary, his mother. They prostrated themselves and paid homage. Then they opened their coffers and presented the child with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They were warned in a dream not to return to Herod, so they went back to their own country by another route. After the astrologers had left, the angel of God suddenly appeared in a dream to Joseph with the command, "Get up, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you otherwise. Herod is searching for the child to destroy him." Joseph got up, awakened Jesus and Mary, and they left that night for Egypt. They stayed there until the death of Herod, to fulfill what God had said through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I have called my own." Hear what the Spirit of God is saying to the church. Happy Sunday, friends. Please join with me in prayer. God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be pleasing to you, who are our beginning and our end and our every step of the journey. Amen. When I was a teenager and we were living in Japan, my parents became friends with a Japanese pastor who was something of a misfit. He had artistic sensibilities and didn't fit very well in Japanese culture with its high value on conformity. He hosted a youth group for kids who were high school dropouts, helped them nurture their creativity and get plugged into apprenticeships and vocational training. And he wrote a musical about the Christmas story. My parents still have the CD. In fact, I think my dad has uploaded all of the music into digital form so that he can listen to it on his iPhone. His favorite song is the one sung by the Magi. Recently, after listening to the whole album again, my dad realized something new about that song. His pastor friend composed the Magi's song to emphasize that the Magi came from a foreign land. The Japanese is very simple, childlike, like someone speaking Japanese as a second language. All of a sudden, my dad realized that part of why it was his favorite song was that, in contrast to the other songs that are part of the musical, he understood all of this one. It's slower. It uses simpler vocabulary. His favorite song is the one designed to sound like it's sung by someone still learning Japanese. It was a humbling realization, and one that gave us all a chuckle. I have always experienced church as a place that welcomes and celebrates misfits. But I realize this is not everyone's experience. It may have been shaped by growing up in Japan, where conforming to Japanese culture does not include going to church. And so Christian churches naturally collect people who don't feel like they fit very well in their own culture. But some churches do value conformity, whether it's by expecting everyone to wear their Sunday best, or to already know all the beloved songs, or to vote the same way, read the Bible the same way, have the same socioeconomic experience. And when we zoom out to look at the trajectory of Western Christianity over the last few centuries, it's easy to see how often Christians and Christian missionaries have imposed their own cultural norms on other people, conflating Western dress and hairstyle and furniture and food culture with Christian faith itself. The story of the Magi stands in stark contrast to any of these attempts at cultural homogenization. Here are people from a different country, practicing their own spiritual and intellectual traditions of observing and interpreting the movements of the stars. Something that's forbidden in the Torah, and so not a part of the practice of people in Judea. These astrologers determine that the birth of an important king has occurred in the country of Judea, and they set off to pay tribute in the ways their own culture dictates. And the gospel account indicates that their attentiveness to the stars has led these magi to be accurately tuned in to the incarnation, the arrival of God in the flesh. They arrive at the palace in Judea, ready to greet this new king, and receive instructions from priests and scholars and ancient texts and prophecies. But in the end, as they leave Herod's palace, they return to their observation of the stars. It's not the scribes letting them know that the child is to be born in Bethlehem that ultimately leads them to him. They see the star again, and in following those familiar practices from their own culture, find themselves at exactly the right house where they encounter Jesus and his mother. And they do not convert. They don't get baptized or circumcised. They don't even stay very long. They greet Jesus, offer him their gifts, and return home. Imagine how different the last 2,000 years of human history might be if Christians had taken the story of the Magi as our model of cross-cultural interaction. If we trusted that God was at work in the lives of people whose spiritual practices are so different from our own. If we resisted the impulse to expect conformity of people who come looking for Jesus. This is, of course, exactly what we strive for in the United Church of Christ and in this congregation in particular. We want to embrace and welcome each person who comes seeking Jesus, no matter who they are or where they are on life's journey. And there are some exceptional ways that we have learned how to do this. We throw up rainbow streamers and flags and banners, especially in June, to let LGBTQ folks know that in contrast to so many other Christian churches, we celebrate their relationships and their health and wholeness, and we invite their gifts into leadership in our midst. No one needs to be in the closet to belong in this church community. We have books and activities set out in the aisle of our sanctuary so that children and youth and even fidgety adults have the option of participating in worship with tools that help them engage. We have headsets to help folks hear and live streaming to help people who participate from home. And we are continuing to explore and learn new ways of improving the accessibility of our building and our programs. We made space in our building for Sahida to live safely and to practice her own faith here in our building until it was safe for her to return to her community. And membership in this church is not based on doctrinal conformity, what you believe about God or Jesus. And it's not based on sacramental conformity. Are you baptized or not? By whom? At what age? In what manner? Our membership is built around the covenant to be in relationship with one another, to model our community life after the pattern of Jesus, and to participate in the ministries of this church with our time, skills, and resources. All of these are ways that we have made this radical welcome a reality in our church. And I suspect that God will continue to draw us out of our comfort zone in order to welcome and celebrate even more people. I am also feeling, in this age of COVID, that our commitment to radical hospitality is being held in tension with our commitment to safety and caring well for each other. All are welcome, and we expect everyone to be masked. All are welcome, and we will confront behavior that excludes or shames. All are welcome, and we will not tolerate people who abuse children or vulnerable members of our church. All are welcome, and we limit attendance and worship for safety and health reasons. All are welcome, and we are not yet scheduling non-church activities in the building. We actually see this same tension in the story of the Magi from Matthew. The Magi seek and find the Christ child and are received exactly as they are. Who they are and how they have journeyed is irrelevant to their belonging in that place with Jesus. But Herod does not experience the same reception. The Magi's dreams and Joseph's dreams serve as barriers that prevent Herod, who is intent on harm, from proximity to this holy family. In this interim season, as we continue to examine who we are as a church and what we value, I think this tension is one of the areas worth examining. How do we continue to foster a culture of radical welcome when the threats of COVID continue around us? How do we resume our commitment to using our building on behalf of the community of Kalamazoo when it still doesn't feel safe to even have all of our members gathered in the building? How do we improve our ability to welcome children and families by ensuring that all adults who are in leadership are safe, respectful, and aware of appropriate boundaries? And how do we welcome a variety of new leaders into ministry when ensuring those safe church practices involves more training, more screening, more paperwork, frankly? None of these are insurmountable challenges, but they are tensions. Tensions we may never resolve, but that will help us clarify our purpose and hone our identity as a church that welcomes all and really means it. If you feel like a misfit here or anywhere, know that God is the one who has drawn you into this place, just as God guided those magi. And this is a church that wants to receive all of who you are as a gift. We really believe that your presence here makes us a better church. Use that connection card to reach out to me or Pastor Caroline or Diane Roberts so we can get to know you better and find out what you need to feel safe and welcome here. And if this church is already your safe place, if you know that you belong here, then I think this morning's invitation is to lean into the challenge of welcome. How can you extend the safety you experience here to one more person? What ideas do you have for how we can include as many people as possible in as many different ways as possible? How do we communicate hospitality when we also have necessary and appropriate limits on the use of our building or what behavior is appropriate here? We are entering a new year together, beloved church, and the challenges ahead are as unknown as ever. But we do know who we are. It's a good place to start. May each step of our journey this year lead us closer to Jesus, closer to the God who chose the messiness of incarnation out of love for us. May each step draw us closer together in the beautiful messiness of being church. And may we take each step out of love. Amen.